Welcome to Voices of the Community, which explores critical issues facing Northern California communities. We introduce you to the voices of community thought leaders and change makers who are working on solutions that face our fellow individual community members, neighborhoods, cities, and our region. This is George Koster, your host. This episode is part of our series exploring COVID-19's impact on nonprofits and small businesses in the San Francisco Bay Area. Back in April of 2020, when we decided to create this ongoing series on COVID-19's impact, first on nonprofits and then on small businesses in the San Francisco Bay Area, we, like you, had no idea how long the pandemic would go on and what the health and economic impact would be in our community. As we enter the second half of 2022 with the latest explosion of cases from the most recent COVID-19 Omicron mutations, along with the masking requirements being changed and folks getting their vaccinations, our communities are still struggling to deal with the health, economic, mental, and societal impacts of the ongoing global pandemic. This all adds to the ongoing uncertainty of our ever-changing indoor and outdoor, vaccinated and unvaccinated protocols, and the politics of the pandemic that will drive how we all come back together as a unified or fractured community. We will continue to shine a spotlight on the nonprofits and small businesses that make up the fabric of our community, along with the founders and staff who are struggling to deal with the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on their operations, services, and sustainability until we can all get to the other side of the pandemic. Along the way, we will also share with you all the amazing solutions that our nonprofits, small businesses, foundations, and government leaders are working on to help us all get to the other side of the pandemic and come together to rebuild our communities with more economic, social, and environmental equality.
We're prognosticating going forward, mean that there are really two things to think about here. One is the actual feel and look and composition of downtown, the commercial life, the life in general, is quite deteriorated compared to what it was before the pandemic. The other thing to think about is that because of that, and a number of other forces that stack on, it is possible that we're going to see not just the area, but the city as a whole suffer economically going forward. And that gets into issues like, well, if people aren't going downtown, those businesses aren't thriving.
This is the second part of the three-part stories we are covering on how the COVID-19 pandemic has impacted the downtown community and economy of San Francisco, along with the efforts to address the issues and to reinvent downtown San Francisco. In this episode, we feature the voices of two local reporters, Anna Tong from the San Francisco Standard and Noah Arroyo from the San Francisco Chronicle, who are doing some great reporting on all of the issues plaguing downtown San Francisco, as well as some of the efforts by businesses, nonprofits, and the government to address the issues. I'm joined remotely by the data editor at the San Francisco Standard, Anna Tong, along with SF Next reporter from the San Francisco Chronicle, Noah Arroyo. Welcome to Voices of the Community, Anna and Noah.
Hi, nice to be here. Thank you for having me.
Very excited to be here.
And it's great to meet you too, Anna.
Lovely to meet you, Noah. I've been really enjoying your work.
So let's start with having you share with the audience a little bit about your backgrounds as reporters and then why you both decided to dive in and do some reporting on our downtown San Francisco issues. So Anna, let's start with you.
So I just came back into journalism earlier this year, so in January 2022, and before that, I spent 10 years working in tech. So I was a tech worker in San Francisco, and I was what's called a product manager, and I worked at Google and a bunch of other startups. And what led me to reporting about downtown is, as the former business person, I'm really interested in business, and having worked downtown and really liked working in downtown, I saw what was happening to downtown, and then I read, I think in Noah's excellent piece, that something like 75% of the city's GDP is driven by office workers. And so I just really wanted to know. I'm very curious. And I feel invested because I live in the city about just what's going to happen to downtown. And I really want to report on that because for so long, SF has been a city with a downtown core where people are commuting in. And it's really not like that anymore.
Thank you. And Noah, a little bit about your background.
I've been reporting on San Francisco issues, including housing and homelessness, off and on for about a decade. And I came to the Chronicle to be a part of this SF Next project, which is trying to look at the potential solutions to long-term intractable problems that are in San Francisco. And so when we were all sitting down together, the team is assembled. I was looking at downtown. My boss is looking at downtown. We're going, there really isn't a bigger problem, it seems, than this, or a problem that touches more lives, either directly or indirectly. I was not one of those people who would spend much time downtown up until I started working on these stories. And now I find myself walking those streets, gathering string, trying to meet people. But the reason why I didn't was because it just didn't feel like it was a place for me. You know, it felt like it was a place for commerce, retail, and for business people. And that just wasn't me. And I think a lot of people feel that way. But what isn't clear to most and what wasn't clear to me is how central what happens downtown is to the general functioning of San Francisco's economy. And that's not without consequences going forward, which I imagine that we're going to talk about.
Staying with you, Noe, through SF Next, I think the first series that caught my eye was back in May. And that was at the kind of intersection, if you will, of the mayor basically floating her whole budget and then trying to raise money to address downtown. I mean, it's been festering for a while, but like everything with COVID-19, and that's why we've done this series over the last 2 years, it's just really accelerated a lot of the elements, if you will, that were there. So provide a little bit of context of what you feel like the COVID-19 has done to downtown.
Well, there's no shortage of news stories, mine included, that are going to lay out all the problems. Downtown is a mess right now. And that is because the area has become very dependent on certain companies and especially certain industries. And I think the one that people would expect, that they probably read about the most, is tech. That downtown and San Francisco's economy as a whole, you know, by dint of that, have become very dependent on tech. Now, when the pandemic hit, that became a problem because tech was exactly the industry that was most poised to be able to work from home, to work remotely. And that had negative consequences overnight for a lot of things. And it's also that the people who work in those jobs are getting taxed in various ways. And one of those ways by the city is that if they conduct their work within the city, then they get taxed higher than if they don't. So when you have people working remotely, not only did they stop feeding the local businesses in that part of the economy, but they stopped feeding the tax revenue. And so that and a number of other knock-on effects that have happened since then and that we're prognosticating going forward mean that there are really two things to think about here. One is the actual feel and look and composition of downtown, the commercial life, the life in general is quite deteriorated compared to what it was before the pandemic. The other thing to think about is that because of that and a number of other forces that stack on, it is possible that we're going to see not just the area, but the city as a whole suffer economically going forward. And that gets into issues like, well, if people aren't going downtown, those businesses aren't thriving. The offices will maybe stay empty. As they stay empty, businesses will not renew their leases. As that happens, you could have real estate reevaluated for their tax value, their property value. And as those property values drop, tax revenue also will drop to the city. And so over maybe a span of 5 years, maybe 10, you would see a loss of revenue to City Hall, which ultimately means a reduction of City Hall's budget, which means a reduction of city services to people who live here, who, again, you know, as I said, downtown touches a lot of lives. That is a way that people who never spend any time downtown could be very affected by what happens or doesn't in that area.
Thank you. That was a really good overview. That leads directly into your reporting, Anna. Did a really great piece just on how taxes incentivize, if you will, businesses to not have folks sitting in offices. So share with the audience about your reporting.
So the way that business taxes are structured in San Francisco are that they're based on the percentage of a company's workers that are working from SF. So whether it's from your home or from an office in downtown. And so as Noah was saying, once COVID hit, most people come into SF for work. They don't live in SF. So everyone started working from home in the East Bay, Napa, Palo Alto, whatever. And so a lot of companies saw their tax liability to the city drop dramatically. In one case, you know, I was talking to a tax accountant. She was saying one of her clients, that their tax bill to SF had dropped 88%. So these companies are seeing significant decreases in their tax liabilities. And they actually do technically owe money. If you conduct business in a city, many cities do have business taxes. So you would owe taxes in those jurisdictions. But the reality is SF's business tax structure is just so much more expensive for companies than essentially all other cities.
Well, in your example of the person who owned Books Inc. and then moving his operation, if you will, to, I believe it was Oakland, because it was cheaper to basically operate out of Oakland because he was actually being charged for having more bodies in the office.
That's exactly right. And in this article, we did kind of like a scenario analysis. So we just took Square Financial Services, which was one of the companies that complained the loudest about business taxes in SF. And we kind of, we did an estimate for how much they'd owe in SF. And in SF, we estimated they'd owe about $40 million a year. If they moved to Oakland, which they did, we estimated they'd owe probably less than $10 million a year. If they moved to San Jose, it was something like less than $200,000 a year. So a lot of these companies are saving significant amounts of money by having their workers remote and or moving their office presences completely out of the city.
Thank you. That was great context. And Noah, I want to turn to you on some of your reporting, which I found really interesting. And you touched on it in the beginning, the impact on the San Francisco economy from tourism, small business, and office space, and the return of workers estimates. I think you had in your reporting that the average annual per downtown worker was around $5,000 that they spend. And that the controller has one model versus what you thought was perhaps not reality. So share with the audience a little bit more on your reporting on all those issues.
Well, we went to many different departments at City Hall to try to vet our understanding of what was going on the ground. And one of those was the controller. And so we asked them, what percentage of people do we expect are going to be returning to their offices once society normalizes? Now, they had published two different numbers. And the most recent number, I think it was 33%. And I think that was in March of this year. They had published a report saying that. So what I wanted to know from them was, why had they adjusted that compared to the prior percentage? And also, what was that percentage based on? And what I found was that it was based on the best that they could get, which was word of mouth. So we went to somebody who was basing it on a calculation, and that was Professor Richard Bloom at Stanford University. And he was working with a number of other academics. What they have been doing since nearly the beginning of the pandemic is doing monthly surveys to, if I'm not mistaken, both employers and employees. But what I know about for sure is the employees talking about what work from home policy was likely going to be once society normalized. Now, again, these surveys have been taken all throughout the pandemic. So before we get to a sort of endemic status, which I think it's fair to say we're either in or approaching, at least as far as the public dialogues are concerned. And so these were the best guesses of the people who were surveyed by him. And so I think it poses the question, what is our City Hall going to do? What are our city leaders going to do in response to that?
Well, staying with the topic of what is City Hall going to do, there's two pieces of it, and we'll weave back in the mayor's new budget number. But one of the pieces that I found in both of your reporting and in kind of nods to it, you actually called out some more with regards to the city's willingness to require its employees to actually show up in office buildings 5 days a week. So that ties directly back into Anna's whole piece about more people there in the city. And this would be a great example to show businesses that you need to bring people back. And then that, of course, would change the dynamic of taxing. But talk a little about the politics, if you will, of City Hall requiring everybody who gets a city paycheck to actually show up at their office.
I'll be honest, this was not something that I spent a lot of reporting on. And so I will tell you that it was very difficult to get a response from the city to this question. The question being, does Mayor London Breed have the ability to require that people come back to the office 5 days a week? If so, then is there a reason why she's not exercising it? And I really didn't get a satisfying response. It's in the story. It reads like boilerplate. And I took it as, well, there must be something more going on under the surface. Since we published this story, other reporting has come out, and I want to say that the Standard has contributed to this, that puts their finger on it a little bit deeper, I think. They've gotten responses since we tried to this question. And if I'm not mistaken, the general response was that the mayor would like to do it, but that there are union considerations, there are negotiations that happened between City Hall leaders and the union, and that this was one of the factors that was negotiated over. And so the mayor does not have the level of power, we'll say, is my sense, to just snap her fingers and make it happen. I don't know if she has the legal ability, but I imagine that even if that were the case, there would be political ramifications. And that's obviously part of their calculus.
Thank you. And Noah, going back to you, your take on it, because this also ties back into your last two pieces with regards to kind of the re-envisioning of downtown and yet another study that's been, you know, been funded by the city to try to bring people back with events, space, et cetera. But share a little bit about vacant office space and retail, and then, you know, kind of ramp into what your take is on the new reinvention plans.
Complex question. Well, you're not wrong. You walk around downtown and you see that very little is lively. It's not true that there is no life going on. Fiscally, is that those offices are not filling back up. Now, there's a caveat to that, and that's that not all offices are created equal. If you're talking about what we'll say are AAA properties or trophy properties, the Salesforce Tower is an example of one of those. The very high-end office properties are, I'm told by brokers and real estate sources, they are much more populated during the day than the lower end, Class C, the Class B. And so different subsets of office properties have different problems, we'll say, or different degrees of the same problem. And so all of this is the complexity that the city is going to need to grapple with, you know, when they're figuring out what the financial future of this city is and how do we access that best.
You're listening to Voices of the Community, which explores critical issues facing Northern California communities. Voices of the Community is supported by a grant from the James Irvine Foundation, dedicated to a California where all low-income workers have the power to advance economically. More at irvine.org. This is George Koster, your host, and if you're just joining us, this is the second part of the three-part stories we are covering on how the COVID-19 pandemic has made downtown San Francisco into a ghost town. Let's get back to our conversation with San Francisco Chronicle reporter Noah Arroyo and the San Francisco Standard reporter Anna Tong about their reporting of the issues that have caused the downtown to become a ghost town and the various efforts to reinvent downtown San Francisco. I'm going to segue back to Anna on taxes, and we can go back to you, Anna, on taxes, because that's the other thing that I've read and heard, and sadly, it's back to the Great Recession when, you know, Mayor Lee lobbied to basically convert mid-market into a tech incubation zone with the mid-market tax benefit, which people both love, hate, and everyone has their opinion about it. But Anna, do you want to share a little about what your reporting thoughts or recommendations are on what folks are thinking about in taxes?
Yeah, so definitely the business leaders, so Advance SF, for instance, they're advocating for a moratorium on all new taxes. And so because they're kind of saying like, hey, you know, businesses need stability in order to plan. And like the more you pile on new taxes, the more it becomes an untenable place to do business. Obviously, the people that are pro taxes are going to say like, no, this little small percent we're levying on these businesses won't really move the needle. I think it is, and it's kind of unclear what the net result is going to be. So, you know, business tax revenue as a whole, I think, fell like maybe 12% in the most recent fiscal year. But the tax on that was collected from Prop C fell almost 50%. So it fell 45%. And that's a tax on big business. And so, but it's unclear if like that's due to people working remotely or if it's due to businesses really moving out. And then I think the Chamber of Commerce is really advocating to bring back like the Twitter tax break that happened under Mayor Ed Lee. But that, as you said, really became pretty unpopular. I think it triggered a lot of the hatred for tech workers in the city because they really felt that it was contributing to too much inequality. And that's what I feel like. That's something we can all agree on. Like, there is so much inequality in San Francisco. And so I think that there are a lot of things that if the city wanted to, they could do to just let businesses know that they do want them to stay, because there is a perception from business people that the city doesn't want them to be there. And, you know, and if that's the case, that's also fine. We will just have to be comfortable with less tax revenue. So I think there's a lot of ways to go forward, and it doesn't necessarily mean, you know, going back to the Twitter tax break.
Thank you. And Noah, would you like to add any more about taxes? And what I would also ask is if there's anything else in your reporting that you would like to share.
Sure. I'll say this. I have not looked closely at the tax question, but it has been obviously a common element in every conversation that I have with business people or with real estate developers, because it's a major factor in the ecosystem. It's a factor for consideration. Here's a bigger one, I think, for my money. Why would I want to live in San Francisco? There was a long time, I remember because I've been reporting on this stuff for about a decade, there was a long time where the general conversation that happened in the public space was that businesses would decry taxes, where they were and their increases. And the progressive politicians, so to say nothing of the moderates, but the progressive politicians would basically, let's call your bluff, you're not going to go anywhere. The reason you're not going to go anywhere is because we're freaking San Francisco. You know, everybody wants to be here. So this conversation that we're now having about taxes, it's important. But I think that at the end of the day, I think the bigger conversation that is related to is if the reasons for people wanting to live in San Francisco have changed, And if the situation is such that you can't just reinvigorate those reasons, you can't just snap your fingers, you can't pass a certain policy, and then suddenly, you know, the new anxieties are gone, the new objections are nullified, then maybe you need to think a little bit more fundamentally about what is San Francisco, why is San Francisco, and what are the things that, aside from taxes for businesses, are going to get people to really want to move here, maybe including businesses. I think that's a conversation that we're trying to have at SF Next as best we can with the reporting, but I would love it if our politicians would have more of that in the public space more often.
Thank you. And it's become extraordinarily expensive to be in SF, right? With a median home price of, you know, going north of $1.5 million. So how can the public show up? Because as we started this conversation, the whole series is kind of focused on downtown SF, and it really is kind of the economic core and the engine of San Francisco. But from your perspective, how can folks who are listening to the show actually get engaged in helping support revitalization efforts?
Sure. Well, first of all, vote. Vote. We have some elections coming up pretty soon. If there are politicians who are being forward-thinking according to you, then put your votes there. I think aside from that, pay attention to the coverage, pay attention to opportunities to show up digitally or in person to public meetings about these topics. Anytime you can show up and have your voice be heard, do that. Now, as far as engaging with us, the reporters at the Chronicle, who can say something about this at the public level. First of all, you got to follow us on Twitter. We're at SF Next, and pay attention to what we're saying and talk to us. We want to hear from you. You also need to email us. Email us what you hate about the dysfunctions in the city. Email us your ideas about how to potentially fix them. It can be about downtown. It can be about other stuff. SFNext@sfchronicle.com. That's SFNEXT at sfchronicle.com. We actually read those. It can be a time suck after some of our more popular stories, but it's worthwhile because we need to know what the public thinks. So do those things, stay engaged. And if you go to the Chronicle's website, there's a webpage for the SF Next project, and you can sign up for our newsletter, and we will keep you abreast of many things. Finally, last thing I'll say, you got to listen to the SF Next Fixing Our City podcast by my colleagues, Laura Wenis and Cynthia Lopez. They are constantly trying to look for what are the new potential solutions to the problems that are all around us in the city. So listen to that podcast, keep yourself informed, and get engaged.
Thank you. And Anna?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing to me, I think no one already said it, but it's pay attention and vote. I mean, a lot of tech people I know are unhappy about the way the city's being run, but I think I put a lot of it on them because a lot of these people were not paying attention to local politics at all. So people really do have a lot of leverage over what happens in the city. And I would say pay special attention to a lot of ballot measures. Some of those like really make me angry because you can tell that the way they're marketed is not really what's going to happen. And if you don't really want to do all the homework, I would say the Chronicle editorial board or any of these like local publications will do a lot of the work for you. So just don't pay attention to the mailers and try to get more educated and definitely vote.
Thank you. And staying with you, Anna, I'm going to turn to our final question, which is, and I've been asking everybody in the 96 episodes of doing the series so far, which is, what do you think are some of the good or positive things? I know good is going to perhaps way out there in the world of a pandemic, but what do you feel some of the good things that have come out of the pandemic in San Francisco to help us shine a spotlight on some of the stuff that you're reporting on?
Yeah, I mean, like, I come from the tech community and I really see a lot more engagement in the city. And I think that's extraordinarily positive because I think a lot of people did really take SF for granted and they didn't really care about the city too much. But the people that have stayed here that haven't moved to New York or LA or wherever really are caring a lot more about the city. And it just goes beyond that core group of people that used to like be really involved before. And I think that's super positive, because I think everyone should be more engaged and people are really feeling a lot of ownership over the city. And so I think good things will happen.
Thank you. And Noah, same question.
San Francisco wasn't always this expensive. I mean, it's always been attractive. And so comparatively, it's been more expensive than many other cities, including major cities. But there were times in previous decades where you could more easily raise a family here. You could land here with very little to your name and figure it out, and you could make it work. So I think one of the things that this pandemic might do, and I say might because it hasn't done it yet, is it might force that conversation finally about, you know, I go back to what kind of city does it want to be? What is this city's selling point to get people to move here? We've lost something like 6.7% of our population during the pandemic. I think it was the most recent census data that has been reported. And a lot of those people were younger. A lot of them were comparatively wealthier. And so we have not made a compelling argument to them. What is the compelling argument going to be to other people? And I think part of that is going to require that we finally grapple with how damn expensive it is to live here, make cost of living a little bit more doable. Because if we don't, then maybe we'll see people continue to leave and maybe others won't fill their slots. And that is a pretty dark future. I don't think any of us want it. And I don't think our politicians want it.
That was great. Thank you, Anna and Noah, for sharing your wonderful reporting work on how the COVID-19 pandemic is impacting downtown San Francisco through all of the numerous issues you have identified in your reporting and our discussion today. We'll make sure that listeners have your contact information, website, and social media, along with links to your reporting so they can get engaged with the issues, as well as the various solutions being proposed and executed by our local government, business, and nonprofit leaders. Please stay safe and healthy as we all work our way through the latest stage of COVID-19. And of course, all of its variants. So thanks to both of you for being on the show today.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
That's it for this episode of Voices of the Community. You've been listening to the voices of the data editor at the San Francisco Standard, Anna Tong, along with SF Next reporter from the San Francisco Chronicle, Noah Arroyo. To read Anna Tong's great reporting on downtown San Francisco, as well as her other reporting on the many issues and topics impacting San Francisco, please go to sfstandard.com/author/Anna-Tong. And to read Noah Arroyo's great reporting on both downtown, as well as what is next for San Francisco through the SF Next series, please go to sfchronicle.com/author/Noah-Arroyo. And to hear part one of our three stories on downtown San Francisco, which features the voices of Chris Wright from Advanced SF and Jeff Balasario from the Bay Area Council Economic Institute, go to georgecoster.com and click on Voices of the Community, and then click on the COVID-19 series and listen to episode 95. We hope that you enjoyed the insights, points of view, and personal stories from the voices of changemakers and their nonprofits and small businesses featured in this series. To find out more and get engaged with the nonprofits, small businesses, and staff members featured in the series, please go to my website, georgecoster.com, and click on Voices of the Community to find links to the extended versions of these interviews and to listen to the entire series. After listening to these stories, we hope that you will consider making a donation and volunteering to provide a hand up to your fellow community members. Today's episode was made possible by the audio wizard and our associate producer, Eric Estrada, and the graphics magic of Casey Nance from Citron Studios, along with the wonderful crew at the San Francisco Public Press and KSFP. Voices of the Community is supported by a grant from the James Irvine Foundation, dedicated to a California where all low-income workers have the power to advance economically. More at irvine.org. Voices of the Community is a member of Intersection for the Arts, which allows us to offer you a tax deduction for your contributions. Please go to georgecoster.com and click on the donate link to make a donation to help us provide future shows just like this one. While you're on our website, you can enjoy our archived past shows, which feature community voices working on solutions to critical issues facing Northern California communities. And you can sign up for our newsletter to find out more about future shows, as well as shows and events from the organizations that are included in our episodes. Take us along on your next COVID walk by subscribing to Voices of the Community on Apple Podcast, Spotify, and Google Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at George Coster, and we'd love to hear from you with feedback and show ideas, so send us an email to george@georgecoster.com. I'm George Coster in San Francisco, and thank you for listening.